You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of RavensWire, and we are back with another marvelous Monday. I can finally say it. After the Ravens dropped games in weeks 3 and 4, we are back in the win column in week 5 against the Pittsburgh Steelers with a 26-23 victory in overtime. This game was a doozy. A lot was going on. A lot happened. Big injuries for both teams across the board. Big plays. Penalties. A lot happened in this game. It was another emotional roller coaster. We have a lot to talk about because this game, there's a lot to take away from it. We're going to get into the offense, get into the defense, and then also look around the league, see what happened with the Ravens moving to 3-2. It all depends what happens with Cleveland against the San Francisco 49ers tonight on Monday Night Football. If the Browns lose that game, they will fall to 2-3, and the Ravens will reclaim first place in the AFC North. But if the Browns do win, they will stick on top of the Ravens due to head-to-head record and divisional record. So it will be a big game between San Francisco and Cleveland, but we're going to talk about the Ravens game. So let's get right into it. I am Kevin Ostreicher of RavensWire, and this is your Locked On Ravens lead story. And let's start with the offense, and let's start with Lamar Jackson. 19 of 28 for 161 yards, one touchdown, and three interceptions. The first point I want to make here is that, in my eyes, Lamar Jackson has only thrown one interception this season, and that was the interception right before the first half ended yesterday in Pittsburgh, where he didn't read the zone coverage right. Mike Hilton, I believe, dropped off in coverage from that front receiver, went to the back receiver, picked off Lamar Jackson in Ravens territory, helped the Steelers get three more points on the board. That was just a decision by Jackson where he didn't read the defense. He was panicking. The offensive line held up at points, but really, in some instances, just didn't give Lamar time to throw. And the Ravens were backed up deep in their territory. They were trying to get something moving before the end of the half. Jackson saw an open receiver, and the cornerback just dropped off. And that was really the one bad read Lamar Jackson made that forced him into an intercepting throw. That's the one interception Jackson has on the season in my eyes. His two against Cleveland were both not his fault. The two against Pittsburgh that I don't think are his fault, the one where Mark Andrews clearly was contacted with and interfered with, and the ball popped off of his shoulder right into a Steelers defender's hands. And then the one that went right through Nick Boyle's hands and really shouldn't have even been an interception. The refs looked at it. Gene Steratore, who was on point all day, let me tell you, looked at it, said that Devin Bush had the ground assist him in that interception, which was true. You can see in the replays, if you go watch it, his hand sliding up the ball as it hits the ground. That means that he did not have full control of that ball, because if he did, that ball wouldn't be moving. There would be no hand sliding. Thus, the Ravens should have had possession of that ball still. And now people are asking and clamoring, why didn't John Harbaugh challenge? Why didn't John Harbaugh challenge? Well, all turnovers are reviewed, and they sent it to New York, and New York didn't see anything that was definitive, and so they decided to just play on. And that's why Harbaugh couldn't challenge it. And, I mean, personally, at first I didn't even really think about that in my head. I'm like, oh, my God, oh, my God. But then you have to realize and you have to think about it. Maybe there's a reason you didn't do those things, and that's exactly why. They sent it to New York, and they determined it wasn't anything, so they moved on. I personally believe Lamar Jackson didn't have his best game today. He underthrew a few passes, threw a few passes behind receivers, but made a lot of things work with his legs. 14 carries for 70 yards. That's where the Ravens excelled today, was in that running game, and that's where they really pounded the Steelers, because the Steelers secondary is sneaky good. Joe Hayden, Steven Nelson, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Terrell Edmonds, a lot of guys who people forget about, and the Steelers secondary has been a weakness over the past few years for them, and they showed today why it was a strength. You also can't forget about TJ Watt. I mean, the guy wreaked havoc all day long. Watt ended up having 5 total tackles, 1 sack, and 3 tackles for loss. He was all over the field, and he's one of the best young defenders in the NFL, and the Ravens have to play him twice a year, so the game planning will have to be better come week 17 for TJ, but he's just that dynamic of a player, where even if you double-team him with the O-line, he's going to find ways to sneak past and get a tackle for loss in there. So I think with all things considered, Lamar Jackson just wasn't able to put it together today, and he was mad at himself for the interceptions, and I totally understand that. He threw a great touchdown up high to Marquise Brown, which we'll get into a bit later. That catch was, wow, unbelievable. But Lamar Jackson, it's safe to say, did not have the perfect QBR he had in week 1 at Miami. Only a 20 QBR today. The perfect passer rating for quarterbacks is 158.3. So overall, I think that It showed Lamar Jackson improved from last year, but overall, you look at his first five starts of the season, I think this is the one I would single out as his worst performance. But hey, he led the Ravens down the field to tie the game at 23, and the Ravens came out with a win. That's all you can ask for. A win is all you can ask for. You can chalk it up to bad performances by whoever. The Ravens walked out of Pittsburgh with a win, and that was the scenario that everybody was hoping for today, and it happened, just not in the way you wanted to. Speaking of that running game, Mark Ingram, 19 carries for 44 yards in that one touchdown. He was stifled all game, pretty much. It seemed like he couldn't get a lot going, but the Ravens kept feeding him the ball, and I think that actually paid off in the long run because the defensive line for the Steelers looked pretty tired by the end of it. They were still getting to Lamar, still generating pressure, but I feel like Lamar would have had a few less milliseconds to throw it had the Ravens not have run the ball as much, because Mark Ingram just pounds the ball. But the guy who really impressed me was Gus Edwards. His stats don't look eye-popping. 5 carries for 17 yards. But he had a great cutback at one play, and he just runs hard. I would like to see Edwards personally get a few more carries. He showed that he can do it last year. He's shown that he can do it this year. And while Mark Ingram is Mark Ingram and has been very, very dominant for this Ravens team, I think that if you take some of the load off of Ingram, he will be more fresh, and Edwards can show that he's still that dynamic runner, that north-south runner that can really punish opponents just like Ingram can. Looking at the receiving, not a lot of eye-popping stats here. Mark Andrews led all receivers with 5 receptions. Willie Snead led them all with 51 yards. But overall, again, not a lot of receivers stepping up. Willie Snead had the 4 for 51. But again, it was Marquise Brown with 5 targets and Mark Andrews with 7 targets. Hollywood briefly left the game with an ankle injury that he seemed to get after that huge leaping touchdown grab that put the Ravens up 17-7, which he went up very high for that ball and took a monster shot from Joe Hayden, a monster shot. But I think that Lamar is actually trying to spread the ball around a little bit more. Hayden Hurst, 4 receptions on 4 targets. Willie Snead, 4 receptions on 5 targets. Mark Ingram had 2 targets. Roberts, 2 targets. Boyle, 2 targets. You know, we saw in the earlier games, Marquise Brown had 8 targets. Marquise Brown had 13 targets. Andrews, 9 targets. Andrews, 7 targets. It's something where Lamar is learning to trust his other receivers, and that's a positive takeaway that I take out of this game. Because as we get later in the season, teams are just going to say, all right, look, he's been doing this for 8 weeks, been doing this for 10 weeks. We're just going to double cover both these guys and make Lamar Jackson beat us somewhere else with one-on-one coverage. And that's what Jackson's going to have to do. But if he starts spreading the ball out now and making sure that people know, look, we have receiving weapons on this team that you're going to have to account for other than these two guys. Hayden Hurst looked good to me today. He had a lot of nice catches, a lot of good ball security, was holding the ball high and tight. Hayden Hurst is a guy who doesn't get a lot of recognition. Mark Andrews has really taken over that tight end one role. But I think that Hayden Hurst is a very good player, a very good receiver. He has great hands, and I think that Lamar is starting to trust him a bit more, which is very scary for the rest of the league because the Ravens have the best tight end trio in football. And if Lamar learns to utilize those guys in the right way, whew, the league better watch out. The offensive line play today was okay. Lamar was sacked 5 times for 22 yards, so that's not what you want out of your offensive line. It seemed like the pocket was breaking down quite a bit, and I don't know if it was just because of miscommunications or whatnot. Matt Skura was questionable to play in this game with an injury, and he ended up suiting up, so good on Skura for toughing it out for the team. But overall, I think that the offensive line had a so-so game. There were some plays where Bradley Bozeman didn't look great. Skura didn't look great on some plays. But hey, they're going to take the bad plays with the good ones. The offensive line has been a unit this year that has been a strength for the Ravens, and that wasn't expected. So while this might have not been the O-line's best game, it was still a decent showing by the unit. And overall, I think that it's something to build on for next week. And really, the Ravens got the win. They got out of there, and that's all you can ask for out of a game where sloppy play on both ends, penalties, killing both teams. But at the end of the day, what can you do about it? The Ravens got out with the win. We're going to go to break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the defense because there is a lot more to take away on the defense. A much improved performance, I'd say. So stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. But it is Monday, so let's talk about the bedroom. Roman swipes are a clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, and fast-acting, but don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in a discreet, unmarked package, and each swipes packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for whenever you may need it. Swipes are great. They will not transfer to your partner, so they last longer without worrying. They're super easy to use. Just take swipes out of the pocket, swipe it on, let it dry, and you're good to go. That's it. Get $10 off your first order of swipes and free two-day shipping at GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL for $10 off and free two-day shipping. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. Welcome back, everybody, to Locked on Ravens. Kevin Oshaker still with you here. If you haven't yet, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked on Ravens and my personal account at KOshaker34. It's a great way to keep up with the show, keep up with me, and keep up with everything Ravens. So be sure to give us a follow both on the Locked on account and my personal. But let's get into this defense now. Mason Rudolph, 13-20, 131 yards and one touchdown. But the story of the game was that Earl Thomas hit that knocked him out cold. You could see his body go limp the second Earl Thomas delivered that hit. Thomas was flagged for a 15-yard roughing the passer penalty after Rudolph had been out for a few minutes. And the intent here by Thomas was not dirty. It has been a talking point both by Steelers and by Ravens fans. Thomas didn't hit him squarely in the head. He led with his shoulder, put his forearms out to soften the blow. Earl Thomas is not a dirty player. He said after the game that he's never tried to injure anybody in his life, and I believe him. His prayers are out for Mason and his family, and mine are too, because that hit was extremely scary to watch. You go against guys for 60 minutes, you play tough, you play rough, but when something like that happens, all these guys have sympathy, all these guys have emotion, no matter what side you're on. So I'm glad Rudolph is okay and escaped with just a concussion, although just a concussion is still not great. But then Devlin Hodges came into the game, and personally, if the Ravens had lost this game to a rookie quarterback, I would not have known what to do. Luckily, they were able to pull out the win. But Hodges went 7 of 9 for 68 yards, actually played pretty well. And part of that has to do with the lack of the pass rush that was there. The Ravens had one sack all day, a story that's been the story of the season pretty much, is they've had no pass rush, both exterior and interior. The team only has 9 sacks this season total, and Matthew Judon leads the team with 3. That's something that's not going to get it done, especially as you get later into the year. Pernell McPhee has looked good in the role that he's had, but he just can't be playing as many snaps as he's played. Matthew Judon had a great play in the first quarter, but then overall disappeared for most of the game. And that's not to say he played poorly per se, but he could have done more to establish himself, is what I'm trying to say. But guys like Tyus Bowser, who is literally not on the stat sheet, he did not accumulate a stat that was worthy of going on the stat sheet. And Jalen Ferguson, who only had one tackle, those guys need to step up and generate pressure. And if that isn't happening, they're giving quarterbacks 4, 5, 6 seconds to throw. And that is far too many seconds that you're giving quarterbacks, because they can look, they can go through multiple reads, and secondaries can't hold up that long. A lot of flack has been placed among this Ravens secondary, and saying, well, why can't they cover for that long? Why can't they do it? Because it's hard. Receivers are going to go through multiple routes, through multiple breaks, and they'll just juke the defensive backs out of their shoes at one point, and eventually the quarterback is going to say, look, there are 3 guys open. Here we go. Here's my window of opportunity. That's after 4 or 5 seconds. The Ravens have good players in their secondary. Marlon Humphrey, Earl Thomas. Kennedy played exceptional today. We'll get into that in a minute, but those guys are guys who aren't chumps. They know how to play and they know how to cover, but they can't do it for that long, and quarterbacks are just getting way too much time in the pocket. You know, give me Von Miller. Give me somebody who can rush the passer. These young guys, they're young. I get that. They can learn, and they're going to learn. Bowser, it's a little different story than Ferguson, because Bowser's been in the league for quite a while now, but with guys like Bowser, they have to do something, because losing to Darius Smith and Terrell Suggs, these were the guys who were going to lean upon. Tim Williams is already gone, and Bowser might be next if this is how he continues to play, because Eric DaCosta has made a point that if you're not going to produce, you are not going to stay on this team. The Ravens could better use their roster spot right now, it looks like, and I'm a Tyus Bowser fan. I think he has all the potential in the world to become a strong pass rusher, but he has not shown anybody that, and he has not unlocked that potential. And at this point, Eric DaCosta has to make a decision. Is it worth keeping a project on this team, or do we need instant production now? And I think that as the season goes on, it's going to be, look, if he's not producing, this might be his time. So we're going to keep an eye on that, but the pass rush really wasn't there. Only getting one sack on Mason Rudolph. We know the Steelers' offensive line is good. We know that. But I think that the Ravens need more interior and exterior pressure. Jason Lockenfora says that the team is going to be very active at the deadline. I don't know what that means. I don't know who they're targeting. We know Jalen Ramsey is a potential target. But with players like Von Miller, Chris Harris, Stephon Diggs out there, don't be surprised if the Ravens throw a second or even a first out there in a year where the AFC North looks very, very weak and up for the taking right now. And really looks like a two-team race at this point. So hopefully the Ravens will get that situation figured out. But let's talk about Maurice Kennedy. I mean, Maurice played outstanding. 7 total tackles, 5 of those were solo, but overall his coverage was great. When he was playing off coverage, that's where he allowed most of his completions because they were having the receivers run comeback routes, and thus when Kennedy's playing off, he's going to allow 5, 6-yard gains, and I mean, look, if you can limit the quarterback to that, that's fine. 5 to 6-yard comeback is okay, but that's where he allowed most of his coverages. He was able to defend against some deep shots extremely well, and over these last 2 weeks, he's played some of the best football of his career. And Kennedy, being a guy who was cut, went to the practice squad, signed for the highest amount of money of any practice squad player this season, coming up and taking Anthony Averett's starting spot. Anthony Averett was a healthy scratch today. Being able to come in and step up and play like a Raven, Maurice Kennedy might have been the MVP of these 2 weeks if Marlon Humphrey hadn't played so well. Marlon Humphrey had 3 tackles, but had that game-sealing forced fumble on Juju Smith-Schuster in overtime on a play where I didn't expect Humphrey to go for another ball punch after what happened the first time he tried to do it against Schuster, where he missed and fell right off of Schuster and he went strolling into the end zone. So the awareness and the pure strength to knock that ball out and then have the awareness to go pick the ball up after Josh Bynes missed it after it took a very funny bounce. Those are the type of plays that star players make. Marlon Humphrey is going into a star right before our eyes, and it is the best thing to see because the Ravens need stars in that secondary right now, and Humphrey is 100% one of those stars. So being able to have a guy like Humphrey who is turning into a leader, but also just a guy who's learning, and him being so young, he's going to be here for a while. Ravens fans, be ready because he is the next great player in this Ravens secondary. Talking about the inside linebackers, Patrick Owusu had 6 total tackles. Josh Bynes had 5. They looked pretty good together, Josh Bynes and Patrick Owusu. Bynes had that interception against Jalen Samuels, who kind of floated the ball up after Matthew Judon made that exceptional pressure on him, kind of forced him to get rid of the ball. Bynes picked it off, wasn't really going to any Steeler in the area, it looked like. And Owusu looked pretty good. They had to transfer the communication helmet back to Tony Jefferson after he suffered that devastating torn ACL, and maybe more, we'll get into that in a second. But Owusu looked pretty good to me. He looked better with not having to take on a huge coverage role today. Josh Bynes took on some of that and looked good. And I think that this is the start of the turnaround of this Ravens linebacker core, because you look at a player like Bynes and even a guy like LJ Fort, who made his presence known with the first play of the game, made that special teams tackle. Josh Bynes and LJ Fort are 2 veterans who are getting up to speed. They're not even fully up to speed yet. And once they do, and once they get a feel for being in this defense, I think that the linebackers will feed off of that. The young guys, Owusu, Chris Board, even Kenny Young, who was inactive today, will feed off of that. And thus, they will be just a better group in general because the communication will be there. Bynes and Fort will tell the young guys, look, this is what you're doing. This is how you can improve. This is what you're doing well. Keep doing that. And teams need veteran leadership. That's why losing guys like Weddle, Suggs, Mosley, Smith was devastating in ways that aren't just on the field, because those are guys who can teach you things and give you some of their wisdom and their knowledge. And now with Bynes and Fort coming in, those are just 2 more great defensive minds in those meeting rooms. And I was very pleased to see how improved Owusu looked and how much of an impact Bynes had made. But let's get into Tony Jefferson, because this injury is devastating for the Ravens in multiple ways. Jefferson hadn't been playing up to his potential. He didn't look great in some games, but you hate to see a guy go down, especially a leader on this team. I've been saying all year that Jefferson hasn't been playing his best football, but that the Ravens just didn't use him right, and he's more of a run-stuffing guy, and we know that. But you could see his heart and soul on that field, as right after he tore his ACL, he made sure to stick with his guy, brought him down, which ended up being a penalty, which in my opinion was not warranted. But Earl Thomas ended up picking off that pass and returning it for what seemed like forever. But overall, I think that Jefferson is a guy who's a leader, who looked improved against the Steelers, and by the looks of the way he was playing, seemed to have been coming around. So overall, this is a big loss. The Ravens will go with Chuck Clark at the strong safety position. But I can also see Deshaun Elliott maybe stepping into that role. Elliott's been getting some playing time after not really seeing the defensive field over the first 3 to 4 weeks. But I think that Elliott is a guy who can play next to Earl Thomas. He's a ball-hawking safety, having two ball hawks, and Elliott can hit hard, too. I think that they could be a good combination together, so look out for that. But we are going to go to break now. When we come back, we're going to take a look around the league, see what teams won, what teams lost, and what that means for the Ravens going forward. So stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. But before we do that, make a memory that lasts a lifetime. Let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter promo code KICKOFF at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. Welcome back, everybody, to Locked On Ravens. We just got into our game breakdown of the Ravens win over the Steelers, but now we're going to get into some game breakdowns of the rest of the league. As I've said, looking around the league is very important to see who is doing well and who is not, because come week 17, if you're not up with the... If you're not keeping up with who's winning and who's losing, you're going to be very shocked at all these playoff scenarios that happen with the Ravens if they're fighting for a wild card spot or how can they clinch the North or things like that. So I like to keep everybody up to date on what's going on, just the scores, a few stats from each game, but only getting into the AFC teams because at the moment the NFC teams have no effect on if Baltimore makes the playoffs or not. So let's get into it. The Eagles beat the New York Jets 31-6. The Jets are still winless on the year at 0-4. C.J. Mosley did not play in this game again. He's been dealing with a groin injury, but in that week one loss, he looked amazing. He was all over the field. Prayers up to C.J. Mosley, hoping he gets better soon. The Carolina Panthers beat the Jacksonville Jaguars 34-27. Gardner Minshew, 26 of 44, 374 yards, two touchdowns. Leonard Fournette also looks like he's coming back into his own. 23 carries for 108 yards and a touchdown. This loss moves Jacksonville to 2-3. You mentioned a lot of 2-2 teams last week. I think there were 11 of them last week, so we're going to see who fell and who rose with the Ravens in that race. So the Jacksonville Jaguars fall to 2-3. The Houston Texans beat the Atlanta Falcons 53-32. This looks like a halftime basketball score. Matt Ryan, 32 of 46, 330 yards, three touchdowns. But talk about Deshaun Watson, 28 of 33, 426 yards, and five touchdowns. The Ravens have to face Deshaun Watson later this season, and if this game was any inclination of how he will perform, I mean, Watson is a mobile guy, can get out of the pocket, can sling the ball downfield. I mean, talk about DeAndre Hopkins. He only had seven receptions for 88 yards. The star of this game, Will Fuller, 14 receptions for 217 yards and three touchdowns. That is ridiculous. Will Fuller's been a guy who is a deep threat, has been injured for a lot of his career. But when he is there with DeAndre Hopkins, they make up a very deadly 1-2 punch, that deep threat in Will Fuller, and then DeAndre Hopkins, who can catch everything. So the Ravens will have to be prepared for that receiving duo come their time to play them. The Buffalo Bills beat the Tennessee Titans 14-7. The Buffalo Bills, 4-1 on this young year. They have looked impressive. They're not putting up a lot of points, but their defense is getting it done for them. The Tennessee Titans fall to 2-3. John Brown has looked great for them. He had 5 receptions for 75 yards. The Ravens' next opponent, the Cincinnati Bengals, fall to 0-5 with a 26-23 loss to the Arizona Cardinals. Looking at the stats here, Andy Dalton, 27-38 for 262 yards and two touchdowns. Joe Mixon, 19 carries for 93 yards. And this game was actually very close with the Cardinals winning it on a last-second field goal. The Ravens will play the Cincinnati Bengals at home next week, the Andy Dalton-less Bengals at that. So that's going to be a game where the Ravens should win it, and if they don't, that's where you start to maybe hit that panic button, maybe just a little bit. The Patriots beat the Redskins 33-7. The Patriots are making the playoffs this year. They're going to be a top two seed in the AFC, so they're 5-0 right now, but hopefully they slow down once they play the Ravens. The Oakland Raiders beating the Chicago Bears 24-21. Oakland moves to 3-2. Garrett Carr, 25 of 32 for 225 yards. Josh Jacobs, 26 for 123 in those two touchdowns. He's been good coming out of Alabama. He's a prospect the Ravens were interested in, but they opted to sign Mark Ingram and stick with Gus Edwards, which I think was the right decision. The Denver Broncos get their first win of the season, moving to 1-4. Joe Flacco gets his first win in the Denver Broncos uniform, going 14 of 20 for 182 yards, one touchdown, and one interception. Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman carried the load for them, with Lindsay having 15 carries for 114 yards and a touchdown, while Royce Freeman had 13 carries for 61 yards and no touchdowns. The Chargers fall to 2-3 in a game where Philip Rivers went 32 of 48 for 211 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions. Melvin Gordon made his return, 12 carries for 31 yards. Austin Eckler, 3 carries for 7, but caught 15 passes for 86 yards. And finally, the Indianapolis Colts beating the Kansas City Chiefs 19-13. Jacoby Brissett 18-29 for 151 yards. No touchdowns and one interception, but Marlon Mack, 29 carries for 132 yards. The Colts hold Patrick Mahomes to 22 of 39 for 321 yards and one touchdown. If the playoffs started today, the picture would be the New England Patriots with the number one seed leading the AFC East. Kansas City is number two, leading the AFC West. Houston is the number three, leading the AFC South. And Baltimore is the number four, leading the AFC North, pending that Cleveland-San Francisco game. If Cleveland wins, Cleveland would take over that AFC North slot. But if Cleveland loses, the Ravens would hold on to it. The wildcard teams right now would be Buffalo and Oakland, but if the Browns slide into the AFC North lead after tonight's game, the Ravens would take over that sixth wildcard spot. So that's how it looks right now, but as the season wears on, it will change and change and change. But it's just good to know about what's going on in the league week by week. That's all I have for you today. But tomorrow we will have Spencer back on the show for another Taco Tuesday, talking about the Ravens-Steelers game, what he saw, any trends he saw, who played well, who didn't in his eyes. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.